You are listening to the Experience Points podcast for the week of June 10th, 2020. And don't worry, if you can't see this podcast, I have a magnifying glass for you.
EXP big window mode. Welcome back to the Experience Points podcast. I'm George Alvor.
My name is Scott Juster.
We're the co-creators of ExperiencePoints.net, a serious but not humorous conversation about video games, and sometimes those video games come in small packages.
Sometimes bad things come in small packages.
So small that your children can choke and die on it. Please do not buy these. We are talking about the Game Gear Micro, which is a very bizarre thing to exist, we've decided. So what is the Game Gear? I mean, I never owned a Game Gear. But
what
this was
is the Game Gear?
This was a handheld device that Sega released in the year 1990. I was 6 years old at the time. I had never really heard of these, or I probably never touched one.
I feel like the Game Gear was kind of like... I don't know what the equivalent is. It's almost... because... Technically, when you compare it to its contemporary, the Game Boy, it had color. It, you know, the visuals were, you know, you could do more complex things. You know, those sprites looked pretty cool. It had the attitude and batitude of a Sega console. But it always, I remember thinking that there was always that one kid in my class that had a Game Gear, and I was always pretty jealous of it. But then again, I also had kind of, I had kind of stress, sympathy stress for them, because that thing is like so big and so bulky, and you need a million batteries to play it. And like, you think, like, just looking at that thing, someone's going to steal that thing from you.
Right, it was the Xbox controller, the original Xbox controller of its time, in its size.
Exactly, original Xbox. I mean, but then there was also, I feel like Sega also had another handheld called the Nomad. Do you remember that?
No.
Sega Mad, Nomad?
You say?
No. there we go. It was, okay, I thought I remembered this. It was basically a portable version of the Genesis. Like, you could put Genesis cartridges in there.
Oh, weird. You can put the actual cartridge.
It was a full functional Genesis, but just mobile. And I'm sure it lasted 5 minutes before the batteries ran out.
I mean, if you look at the screen real estate of the original Game Gear, like, it just seems like it's a better, physically speaking, it seems like a better device than the original Game Boy, right? I mean, I would think originally looking at that screen, you'd be like, oh yeah, this Game Gear is so advanced.
Yeah, I mean, look, man, there's color. Check this out.
Sure, yeah.
Green Hill Zone, the hills are green.
Right, and we got like iterative versions of the Game Boy over time, but I mean, I'm sure Game Gear was cool for a hot second. It just didn't have any games.
Well, you're in luck, my friend, because Sega has decided that what you need is not just a Game Gear. You need four Game Gears. And what's that you say? Four Game Gears. You can't fit that in your house. Don't worry, my friend. We have a solution for you. We're going to shrink them to a ludicrous size.
I mean, I understand making these small and portable, but it didn't need to be like, honey, I shrunk the fucking kids level of minuscule. Like, these things are the... okay, so the screen measures 1.15 inches diagonally. Just a smidge over 1 inch diagonally. That's fucking crazy. That is so small.
I'm like, pretty sure that's even smaller than the trackpad on the PS4 controller.
Yeah, I mean, 100%. 100%. I mean, that is... I think I actually have like a children's ruler in the desk in front of me.
Okay, oh, here we go. Live measuring.
I do. I have like an old school wooden. All right. Yeah, dude, this is so small. I mean, it is literally. Holy cow. That's so small. Oh my God. What an embarrassment this product is. I mean, this is like a third of my iPhone's width.
Yes.
You know, like, not even height. It's, that is just crazy. I honestly don't know how you are expected to see what's going on in a game like Sonic the Hedgehog, where there's random shit going on the screen at all times.
Or Shining Force, that is an RPG where you actually have to read things.
Like, that's crazy.
Well, George, don't worry. Don't worry about it. Don't fret. Because if you are if your old eyes, Grandpa, are having problems with this, well, check this out. Remember the Sega Big Window?
No.
Well, it was a magnifying glass that only kind of worked in the era where you needed magnifying glasses to play portable video games. And guess what? There's a Big Window Micro for these GameGear micros.
I mean, can you even just imagine you're holding this thing, right? And I've seen the
Big Window, I swallowed it.
There are images of the Big Window on top of it, right? Mm-hmm. But the Big Window that's on top of the Micro is still smaller than the Micro by a large margin, you know? you're not quadrupling the screen real estate at this point, right? So you're holding this tiny little thing that's literally like, you know, an inch and a half, 2 inches in width, right? And then you're adding on this other object to make your total window screen go from what? 1.25 inches, not even the 1.25, 1.15 inches to, I mean, honestly, looking at this thing, what do you think the distance diagonally on the big
window? That's what I was thinking. Like,
2 inches?
That's what I was saying, like maybe doubled, I don't know.
That is absolutely bonkers. And then add to the fact, you can only get this window if you buy all four colors of the Sega Micro. And when I was seeing this article, I was like, okay, cool, different colors. I can get whichever color I like. And then play all my Sega games on it. Everyone has its own set of four games that you can't get on the other ones? And they're $50!
I like the idea that the Big Window Micro is a litmus test where it's like, oh, if you're serious about this, one, you're going to buy all four, and then we'll cut you in and on this special deal and actually make them playable.
You don't even get four of them to go on every one of your consoles. That's absurd. It boggles the mind that someone could spend $200 on these four tiny pieces of plastic that you will lose in a week.
Well, I mean, I guess it's yet to be seen if anyone will spend USDs on them, because I don't know if it's been announced if they're going to come to the States or not. Maybe this is one of those increasingly rare,
in Japan.
You know, Japan only curios that we'll have to. I feel like there's fewer and fewer of those, where there was a time that video games were much more regionalized and you had to import games and there was only certain hardware in certain regions. But I feel like that's gotten away from, we've gotten away from that, except for this, which is, you know, I mean, maybe there's a reason why it's only in Japan. Maybe there's some love for the Game Gear in Japan that
I mean,
we're
keep
not
it in
sensing.
Japan then, dude. Like, let's fucking quarantine part two, baby. Like, keep that shit out of American shores.
You can't quarantine. It's too small. It'll fit through an N95, no problem.
Well, like, here's a wild idea. What would this discussion be like if Sega instead said, hey, we're just going to re-release the Game Gear, and it's going to have every single Sega Game Gear game on it that we can license?
I mean, that's
regular
that's,
sized,
right? Regular sized, but it approached in a modern way, which means like each of those ROMs must be like a megabyte each or something like
that.
Yeah, they're not big. I mean, that's what led me down this road for the podcast, where there's this whole alternate world where the Game Gear won. You know, there's this whole alternate world where this is led in America versus Japan. You know, the nostalgia is so great for these games that it was led here. And so I think Sega is a perfect target for those kind of counterfactual histories or, you know, alternate realities. And there's a few others out there that I'm interested in. But yeah, I mean, that's the thing. Is there even the demand, right? I know so few people that had a Game Gear, and the people that really cared about Sega mostly played it for the console anyway, not the handheld, you know?
Right. Yeah. I mean, even the games that are on here, I mean, most, if not all of these had console releases and were probably played on the console first, right?
Yeah. I think it's a lesser version. Each of those games, or at least the Sonic ones, it's not the ideal version of Sonic, you know?
Right. I don't know about like the GG Shinobi. I never played that game.
Right.
So. Yeah, I mean, I guess, yeah, maybe you're right. In Japan, it would have been maybe this is like a bigger deal. Here in the States, this just seems like a gimmick. Like, this is a toy that you should be getting out of a vending machine if you drop 25 cents into it, you know?
Oh, man, maybe it's, I mean, claw machines are all the rage, especially in Japan. This is a claw machine thing.
Yeah, it is a good claw machine thing. Fun fact, if you want to play an actually fun game, there's claw machine games that you can play on your phone that connect to the internet, and they just have a webcam of an actual claw machine, and if you get it, they'll mail it to you.
What the heck? Yeah. Is this like from an, you know, is this from some like beach boardwalk somewhere? Or is this someone that has just set it up for
it's
funsies?
It is literally in Japan. There are hundreds of these. Yeah.
Holy crap.
My coworker has admittedly spent hundreds of dollars buying credits to play these games. And she's won, you know, like a lantern.
Stuffed animal.
Yeah, like a lantern in the shape of like, you know, Nobi Nobi Boy or something like that. Man. Anyway, weird times. Yeah, so this is weird.
One of my counterfactuals is, man, am I using that term right? When I was a true historian, there was a kind of technical difference between a like alternate history and a counterfactual history. I forget what it is now. Maybe I'll try
to, you got me, man. Whatever.
I don't know. Anyway, one of my alternate realities is, what would have happened if Tetris came to the Game Gear first?
Ah, ha-ha.
You know?
Yeah.
What would that have done? Would, because I feel like Tetris was the killer app for Game Boy and just launched. I mean, Nintendo never looked back. If you think, I would argue, if you look at it across the span of time, Nintendo's success has been more tied to the handhelds than it's been to the consoles. And so, yeah, you know, I just wonder what would have happened if Tetris came to Sega instead of Nintendo.
But surely I don't think when people think of the nostalgia era of playing their handheld devices, their first thought is Tetris, you know? Like, that's the system seller at the time. But, I mean, isn't surely a part of it is people were chasing experiences that Sega just never provided, be they gameplay experiences or eventually, you know, high fidelity experiences, you know?
Right.
I mean, it feels like Sega was always a bit behind, other than, weirdly enough, the Game Gear.
Yeah, yeah, of putting a more technically capable system out there.
Yeah, I mean, I wish I knew more about hardware, because I think there's a fascinating story when it comes to any of these sort of the historical element of the way that we play games today, that a lot is founded on people getting lucky or finding a cheap source or conversely spending a ton of money taking at a loss on hardware that was way too expensive for them to use so that they could quote unquote win, you know?
Right. Right.
Like by the time Sega was coming out with the Dreamcast, like that was already using cheaper off the shelf hardware than some of their competitors were doing that were building these like custom, you know, boards for their consoles.
Yeah. Yeah. The reason, I guess I'll say, you know, one thing for the Game Boy and for Tetris, I made the distinction around Nintendo as a business versus the, you know, popular or critical reception of Nintendo games. Because I think you're right on the artistic side, but
yeah,
you know, if you didn't have something, there's some old picture of George H.W. Bush in the hospital recovering from surgery playing a Game Boy, and right. I feel like...
And what would have happened if George W. Bush Sr. just died in the hospital?
Or if he was playing a Game Gear.
or if he was playing a Game Gear, exactly.
I just... The thing... Nintendo has always secretly rested its entire company on this insane success of the mobile platform all the way up through the 3DS.
Totally.
And so it's just... Yeah, that stuff is super interesting to me. But yeah, I mean, I think it's a good point, especially around... You know, the difference between the critical reception and, you know, whatever's propping up the financials.
Well, I mean, even the creative side, right? Like, you have this world where, you know, what if fucking Miyamoto-san decided to become a school teacher instead, you know?
Yeah.
Like, or what if he had gotten a job at a different company? What if he'd gotten a job at Sega,
you know,
and not Nintendo? Like, there are these confluences of events, but so much of the history of video games does kind of is kind of rooted in these like individual moments or people or technological advancements or acquisitions that are so defining of its era. And now I think that's a little bit harder to see, right? Because everything is spread out. Yeah. Game designers work at these enormous studios. They move from publisher to publisher, and you know, the surface area of what is and isn't impactful in the game space is far vaster and more diffused,
yeah,
at least in the way that I think that we understand historically those like pivotal moments in game design and game production, you know?
Yep. Let me throw another scenario at you. This is a modern one.
Okay.
A modern warfare one.
Ooh.
What if Call of Duty 4 Modern Warfare never came out?
Oh, man. I honestly, yeah. I mean, see, even with the diffuse thing, though, right? Like, you do have these flashpoints where it's not always convergent evolution, you know?
Yeah.
It really isn't always, well, we were all getting there.
Yeah.
You know, would we, yeah, man, if Modern Warfare.
Because I feel like that set us on a course of, I mean, we had been talking, by that time we had been talking about, you know, someday every game's going to be an RPG. You know, there's always yeah. going to be like stats and everything. But who would have guessed that it would come from a first person shooter? And then who would have foreseen the ripple effect of progression as a mechanic, like meta progression yeah. as a mechanic without Modern Warfare?
Do you think that that lesson would have been learned eventually from the mobile game space anyway, though, which had found ways of, you know, penny pinching out its players to death, you know? like loot boxes were an inevitability because, you know, even Sega was purchased by a pachinko company, you know yeah. what I mean? Like,
right.
that degree of integrating those psychological rewards in games maybe would have been an inevitability, I guess.
Mm. Yeah.
But there is a certain perfect storm in that case, you know?
Right.
Yeah. I mean, I have one as well, right?
Yeah.
That's another modern one, but what if crossplay had just been assumed, you know?
Like this whole time.
Yeah, like what if we just had assumed years ago that, like, and there's just so many things, right, that we just take for granted, right?
Yeah.
And one of them until very recently is console exclusives, you know?
Yeah.
Or pre-order bonuses, or, you know, like those all right. kinds of things like that. It would be fascinating to me to know, like, if we had just assumed that we should be able to do the things the moment we're able to do them. Like, the moment the internet enables us to crossplay, we should crossplay. Like, why is that? And yeah. even now, in 2020, it's still a major concern amongst players. It's brought up with some consistency. I think this next-gen console cycle might be a defining turning point in yeah. crossplay and the expectation that this is built into all of our games. I think that was kind of started already with just the widely played things like, you know, Fortnite and the Battle Royale games, yep. which again is like another, right? That's like another turning point. But we could have just as easily said, hey, 10 years ago, crossplay needs to be a thing, you know? As soon as we could play online.
It's so wild that it wasn't, because we had been, PCs had been kind of, you know, PCs are so divergent and diverse in terms of, you know, there's no standard PC setup. And so you know, you have this brand of PC, so you can't play with this brand of other player. And,
yep.
but that was like that forever. Like it blows my mind that we put up with it for this long period.
Yeah. I think some of it comes from this earlier era where the devices that we were playing on were so different, right? Like
yeah.
your Sega controller had 6 buttons, you know,
versus you monsters.
Like another console having it different. Right. And
yeah.
the more we moved into good ergonomic design for your hands, well, until the recent, you know, half inch Game Gear Micro, right, which is not ergonomic at all. That barrier, that idea that like, oh well, this is just different systems and inherently it's a different interface and it's too hard, we can't really do it. I mean, or maybe, you know, again, I don't know very much about networking infrastructure. I don't know if maybe this was a challenge that we just really couldn't overcome a decade ago, but I think there are certain things that we could have asked that would have been, you know, pretty fundamentally different and changed things had we made that assumption. And the same can be said of like loot boxes, right? Yeah. Like going back to the Modern Warfare thing, we have seen loot boxes receive congressional attention, you know? Mm-hmm. There have been, you know, lawsuits and
ESRB?
ESRB. No. The governmental agency for monitoring gambling.
FTC.
FTC has made statements about gambling and loot boxes in video games. We saw the UK sort of requires particular announcements about it. Like, there's a lot of legal things as well. Yeah. COPPA over this past year, right?
Oh, yeah.
Has pretty significantly changed how video games are allowed to collect data from their players, share information about their players, and sell things to their players. And a lot of this stuff could have been sort of adjusted for or anticipated ahead of time in a way. The ESRB certainly could have played a bigger role in that, but they didn't. And it would be really interesting to know, like, if there had been a quicker backlash, you know, if this had been like a Mortal Kombat moment for online game gambling, then maybe even the way that we buy digital products would have been significantly different.
Yeah, that could have bled out into non-video game areas.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Let me see. Let me throw another one at you. Okay. What if Bungie never gets acquired by Microsoft?
Oh, man.
Because Bungie at the time was making Halo for the Mac.
Fucking system seller, dude. You'd be a Mac gamer. It'd be a Mac Master Race on Reddit, you know? Wow.
I mean, I don't know. I mean, maybe this is an oversimplified view, but I fully attribute the success of the Xbox to Halo.
I agree 100%.
You know, is there an Xbox 360 without a Halo?
Yeah. Well, the question I think I would have is there a Halo without Microsoft? Is there a Halo 2?
Yeah. You know,
like, what does that franchise look like if you're limited to
Mac? There's a Marathon 2. I'm waiting for it.
I mean, the wild thing Oni. Is, right? Like, there are countless games out there that are good, rock-solid games that just never got traction, never got picked up for one reason or another, you know? Maybe Microsoft would have found a different game to be their capstone title on that console.
Right, right.
And or maybe not. Maybe, like, Halo would have gotten picked up by another studio and it would be an even bigger success in the long run because Microsoft wouldn't have, you know, neutered their creative potential a few years later. I don't know. Yeah, that's a good question. That's a good question. I mean, I have those same questions about the slow way that Japanese games find their way over to the US and like how it would look like if that international publishing support were just better handled over the years, you know, if like Mother had been brought over better, you know, if like localizations had been done better.
Or what if consoles launched day and date worldwide all the way back into the 2000s and 90s and so forth? You know, how would that have changed things for people?
Right. Or was there something quintessential about that experience and waiting and having to port things and people playing games in Japanese because they couldn't wait? That is part of the appeal and allure, culturally speaking, of those games.
Yeah.
I mean, one of the other big ones that I have is around E3, right? Because, you know, there was a moment when E3 decided that they were going to increase the pomp and circumstance of it, right? For a period of time, E3 was like GDC, you know, where people who are in the know and are game developers will go and will, you know, it's a insider trade show.
But yeah, it was like a business-oriented thing.
Yeah, it's
a bunch of people from like Toys R Us are there to figure out how much inventory they should buy.
Right, and it didn't become this sort of big cultural moment overnight, right? Like this was built up and changed over time. And now we're in a state where who knows what the future of E3 is going to look like in a post-COVID-19 world. But it had every sign of continuing to be open to the public and selling tickets for people to come in. And it was this, you know, this light show. And we've seen that story ebb and flow as well. But I mean, what would be our touchstone moment of the year if not for E3?
Right.
You know, or would this be a much more universal, diffused, small game show kind of thing, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think that is, I mean, I would argue the move to digital would have forced the evolution of E3 no matter what, because you wouldn't have those, you know, I'm the regional buyer for the West Coast of Target and I need to figure out how many Super Mario boxes to put in my store. You know, like right. you just wouldn't have that anymore. So they would need to switch it to a consumer, you know, a B2C type of conference instead of, you know, the business to business type of yeah. conference.
Yeah. Yeah. Very true.
Here's a dark 1980s alternate reality.
Okay.
What if Atari never fell?
Oh, yeah. Another heavy hitter. Yeah. I mean, this is like questions like, what would happen if the Cold War never ended? You know I mean? Like, yeah, it's this so is alien like the, to me.
This is like the Man in the High Castle type of like.
Yes, exactly. What if the Nazis had won World War II and we were living in like a Nazi ethno state or something? Yeah, I mean, one, that's a nightmare. In a way, that's far more scary than the Atari thing. But, you know, like, we are, just imagine like the competition, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Or is it just doomed, right? Like if Atari didn't go that route and Sega didn't go that route, Xbox, maybe they would have, you know, or maybe, you know, maybe Nintendo would have caved at some point, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I feel like the Atari approach was fundamentally different than what Nintendo and Sega came into after the crash.
Yeah.
And I mean, many people attribute the crash to Atari's business practices of having a bunch of different consoles on the market, not really being very picky about who put games out, so the games are yep. low quality, and you know, various other things that happened. So you got to wonder, what would video games have ever, when video games are treated like that in a much more commodified kind of tossed off way, is there a path for the medium to grow even to what it is now, which is like not by the, it's not exactly a mature medium by any definition of that word, but it's more than, oh yeah, this is the thing that you find in the toy aisle of Toys R Us. And it's,
yep.
you know, for your little nephew that you buy, you know?
Yeah. But would Atari have matured into what we sort of recognize now as a leading, you know, console and software publisher?
Yeah. You know? I mean, judging by Atari's, well, or the shell corporation that now has license to use the Atari logo, isn't the last thing that they made that hat, that speaker hat?
I don't even know what that is.
There was a Bluetooth enabled hat with speakers that was branded with Atari logos.
Cool. Super cool.
But when I saw that, I was like, yeah, that's the spirit of Atari. I mean, this, you know, Nolan Bushnell also created Chuck E. Cheese. So, I mean, I feel like that's on brand.
There you go. Yeah, strange. I don't know. I mean, I was thinking about mobile games when you were talking about this as well, because mobile games to me feel like there was a moment where everyone thought that this was the future of games.
Yeah,
specifically like phone games, right? Oh yep. It's in your pocket and we're gonna get some amazing mobile games out here, and it became a wild west, and it still is yeah. a wild west in a lot of ways.
Right.
People have figured out how to monetize it. People also have figured out how to game the system of awareness within right. that space. And so it has become, it has basically become a space that is now so clogged that it's very difficult, almost unimaginable to change it, right? Mm. It's very hard to imagine a mobile game space on your phone that is vastly different than what we have now, mm. right? It's kind of the same thing can be said for streaming platforms, right? Like there was a service that wanted to, I think it still exists. I'm sure it's not doing phenomenally well, but there was a service that wanted to have a streaming service exclusively for your phone, and they were going to mm-hmm. make television shows, but you could only watch it on your phone.
Oh, Quibi.
Quibi. Yeah. Like what the fuck is Quibi, dude? Like that feels like this. So it's so backwards and misunderstands, I think, the way that we've now, like everything has been divided. Like it feels like we are sort of all understanding now where things belong, you know?
You're right.
Like right. certain experiences are okay on mobile. Certain yeah. experiences are for your TV, and some of them are for your, you know, Roku device or whatever, right? Like we've partitioned out entertainment in a way that I think it makes a bit more sense. And so it's just impossible to imagine it being in a way that's other than it is. But who knows if at that critical juncture there had been a sort of rallying cry for a different kind of experience or a different way of managing the marketplace. Who knows where we would be? Like, maybe there would be a greater impact.
Right.
And we would be discussing it more on podcasts like this.
Well, and part of it is probably whatever got popular first sets the stage, or, you know, it carves the channel that everything else flows through, where it didn't start as a mobile game, but I would argue that something like Farmville basically set the template for any sort of time-based, energy-based game that got rapidly transitioned to mobile.
Yep.
You know, what if Farmville wasn't the really big first Facebook game, therefore influencing mobile? You know, what if it was, you know, what if Squaresoft put out an RPG that just got very popular for whatever reason?
Well, I mean, one of the things that I like to imagine is, what if that space had been dominated earlier on by board game designers, you know, where that right. space can be thriving, and some have found great success porting board games over to the mobile space, because a lot of it kind of makes sense, right? Like, there's hidden information that you have access to. There's asymmetry to these kinds of experiences. It can be more multiplayer. If we had imagined those dominating in a way, you know, maybe the rise of popular board games sort of, if that were to peak at the exact same time that mobile games were peaking, like, maybe right. it would have been a different experience, because I don't think we can just assume we were doomed to get to this position.
Yeah. There was a flashpoint where the right time and place happened to some game, yep. and it just gathered the attention. And then also, you know, there's a psychological component to it, where people were very knowledgeable about exploiting how humans' brains work in terms of just keeping them on that treadmill that
yep.
locked us in. Yeah. And now it's really hard to get out of that energy model, you know, of like the quick hits every once in a while.
I mean, counterfactuals, like alternate histories, the reason they're fun, I think, to think about is because they remind you that history isn't an inevitable one-way singular course, right?
Like, right.
Yeah. There are these moments, and, you know, and we could find many of them outside of just video games, right? Like, what if unions hadn't been systematically dismantled in the U.S. and the games industry right. had been unionized 20 years ago, you know,
right.
or like the way that we make games and consume them would have been different now. And yeah. there are ways that we can imagine history from this point forward also unfolding. And, you know, people can get rich, or they can change the world for the better if they can identify where right. those flashpoints are and sort of make that change actively. Right.
Yeah.
I think to some extent, are we watching it now with VR, right? Like,
yeah.
it feels like these are the times where a decade from now we'll look back and go, well, that was its chance, you know?
Yeah.
Or that's when they thought that it was their chance, but really this is their chance.
Yeah, yeah. This is the time and place for it. Or, you know, this is the time and place when there was two things that were competing and one edged out.
Yeah.
I mean, we've been thinking a lot about these, like, you know, thinking horizontally, basically. I mean, it kind of goes back to our podcast last week, where what if you just declare something? Police can't have guns in America anymore. Where yep. it sounds crazy. It sounds, what? How would that ever work? But then you realize, oh, well, it is actually quite possible. It's just that you have to stop thinking in the same channel
right.
that you've been thinking in for all these years. And so, as silly as these types of exercises are sometimes, you have to be willing to imagine something ridiculous in order to change anything.
Yep.
And so it's kind of a fun exercise, but just work that muscle every once in a while.
Yeah. And I think that's also why it's fun to look at weird designed games now, because
yeah.
who fucking knows? Like, that could be the next big thing, you know?
Right. Right.
Invest in Fortnite now, or whatever the new next Fortnite is, you know?
Right. Right. Well, I'll end with one of my things that I wish had happened. I wish the Nintendo PlayStation had made it to market, because I would have been fascinated to see what Nintendo did with multimedia early, because they were late to the game. You know, like, they didn't even embrace discs until the 2000s.
Yeah.
They were still on cartridges. And then also, you maybe wouldn't have had an independent Sony So what would that have looked like? Maybe that gives Sega the space to continue to survive. And I think a lot of the stuff that we like most about the PlayStation complements Nintendo's game design philosophy pretty well. So I would just be fascinated to see what that world looks like when if that deal persisted.
Yeah. Mine is, what if Kojima had made Silent Hills? Chew on that, everybody. Somewhere, or rather, continue chewing on that.
In some better universe, in some better thread, our much happier alternate selves are playing that.
I mean, I think we can all agree we're pretty much on the worst timeline, you know what I mean? So there's got to be a better one where people are playing PT like full 60 hours, you know?
Oh man, all right, we will leave it there for now with that wistful thought. experiencepoints@gmail.com is our email address,
and experiencepoints.net is our website. Come on down, bring your friends, find us wherever fine podcasts are sold.
All right, until next time, everyone, thank you for listening. We will talk to you next week.
Ciao. Every time.